I call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, January 27th, and the time is 8:04 a.m. Members present are full house. We have Representative Kai Holland, Representative Mike Prox, Representative Carolyn Hall, Representative Steve St. Clair, Representative Garrett Nelson, Co-Chair Rebecca Himshute, and myself, Co-Chair Donna Mears. We have a full house and quorum to do business. I'd like to remind members, staff, and folks in the audience, we're allowing members to use electronic devices during committee meetings, but please silence your cell phones and be subtle about it. As a reminder, staff and members of the audience may not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of my lovely committee aide, Talia Ames, and she will take care of it. Thank you, Talia, and thank you to Co-Chair Himshute's committee aide, Thatcher Brower. Before we get started, I'd also like to thank Recording Secretary Sophia Tenney and helping us from the Juno LIO, Chloe Miller. Welcome to CIA, Chloe. We have one bill on our agenda today, which is HB 255, Senior Citizen Grants Dividend Raffle, sponsored by Representative Stapp. This is the bill's introductory hearing. But before we welcome Representative Stapp and his staff to the table, we'd first like to welcome our two newest committee members and give them time to introduce themselves. Representative Garrett Nelson, Representative Steve St. Clair. Please take a couple minutes to tell us about yourself, your district, and anything about your interest in serving on this committee. They were aware. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Garrett Nelson, represent District 29, which goes from Fishhook to Valdez, essentially. And I've served on the Sutton Community Council for the last, 7 years, and I chaired that for the last five. And, you know, a lot of the issues that come before this particular committee are ones that we've dealt with between, just a multitude of issues. And so I'm honored to be part of this committee and honored to represent District 29 and look forward to working together with everybody.
Thank you. I've got a community council background myself.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Steve St. Clair, District 26. In a nutshell, I spent 20 years in the military, then various things, and then 2016 co-authored a budget book, came down and worked for now Senator Tilton for 6 years. And the seventh year, I was asked to be chief of staff for Thomas Baker, who was appointed out of Kotzebue. I'm happy to be here and ready to go to work.
Thank you. And we're kicking off with a stellar presentation, I am sure, from Representative Stapp. We are looking forward to working with you gentlemen this session. HB 255, Representative Stapp and staff Liz Rexford, please welcome to the committee this morning. Please approach the testifier table, put yourself on the record, and proceed with your bill introduction.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Will Stapp, represent East Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and Badger, up in Fairbanks, House District 32, and this is my staff, Liz.
Good morning, Elizabeth Rexford, staff to Representative Stapp.
And thanks for the high praise. I don't know if I can follow up the stellar presentation comments, but I'll do the best I can with HB 255. So, with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd just like to give a quick overview of the bill and kind of what it does and why I introduced it. And then for the sectional, I'll kick it over to my staff, Ms. Rexford. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, HB 255. So, most folks, I think, are familiar with the PFD education raffle. This bill is fundamentally designed to kind of work the same way, except for the topic was a little different. It's going to be for senior support services. So HB 255 creates a new voluntary way for Alaskans who, most Alaskans love our seniors and our elders, and they want to support them. It creates a voluntary way for everyday Alaskans to support senior citizen services. It builds on a system that Alaskans know and trust, i.e. the permanent fund dividend and the ability to kind of pick, click, give portions of that for different programs. And kind of the why I introduced this bill, I have a constituent up at Fairbanks. Her name's Ms. Vivian Steiner. She runs homes for seniors. And as most of you are well aware, Alaska has a ever-increasing senior population. Therefore, more folks generally require a higher need of services. And demand for core services for our seniors like Meals on Wheels, transportation, supportive housing is outpacing our current occupancy and ability to provide those level state level services. So I always try to look for solutions and the ability to facilitate those types of things in the most efficient manner possible. Some key design principles in HB 255, which my staff will get into more in depth, is just to let everyone know on the committee, this bill doesn't require any new general fund appropriation. It doesn't impose new fees or taxes, and it's entirely voluntary if Alaskans choose to participate or not participate. How it works, very simply, folks that are over the age of 18 can donate portions of their PFD for senior benefits raffle. Donations are in increments of $100, just like they are with most other things on the PFD website. And contributors may also enter the raffle, which is structured very similarly to the PFD education raffle. And for the rest of, I think, the sectional analysis and the more detailed nature of the bill, I'll move over to my staff, Ms. Rexford.
Thank you, Representative Saab. Ms. Rexford?
Good morning. I'd like to present the sectional analysis. So if we go through the bill, the first section amends the statutory definition of gambling in Alaska Statute 1166-280, subsection 3, to explicitly exclude the permanent fund dividend raffles authorized under AS 4323-230 and 238. So this clarifies that the education dividend raffle and the newly created senior citizen grants dividend raffle are lawful and not subject to criminal gambling prohibitions. Section 2 updates the duties of the Department of Revenue outlined in Statute 4323-55 to reflect the administration of multiple PFD donations and raffle options, including prioritization of contributions when a donor's elections exceeds the amount of the dividend. So this ensures proper administration, accounting, and prioritization of the PFD donation and raffle entries. And just a quick explanation outlined in that section for prioritization. If a donor donates, say, the amount of dividend that is declared for that year, the prioritization is first pick, click, give, which includes a Peace Officers and Firefighters Survivors Fund, Crime Victim Compensation Fund. Second is the Education Fund. And third would be the Senior Citizen Grants Dividend Raffle. So sections 3 through 6 are include technical conforming changes. And this section just maintains consistency and clarity in existing existing education raffle provisions to preserve the existing distribution and framework for education-related PFD donations. So if we skip to Section 7, this section establishes the statutory authority for the permanent fund dividend raffle program related to senior citizen grants. This creates two funds. First is a Senior Citizen Grants Endowment Fund, which establishes a separate account in the general fund. The investments are managed by the Commissioner of Revenue, and this generates grant funding for organizations providing services to senior citizens when fund thresholds are met. The second fund is the Senior Citizen Grants Dividend Raffle Fund. This receives voluntary PFD donations. It funds raffle prizes and the administration of the fund, and it transfers excess balances to the endowment fund. This section also establishes the donation structure, raffle entry mechanism, grant allocation percentages, annual public drawing requirements. This section creates a voluntary sustainable funding mechanism to support senior services while providing an incentive through a PFD-based raffle. Section 8 just establishes the effective date of January 1st, 2027. And that is the end of the sectional analysis.
Thank you. And I'd like to note for committee members, there's a flow chart and the materials that was handed out that describes that flow chart and the prioritization. Thank you, Representative Staff. Do you have any more comments before your invited testimony?
I'd be happy to take questions at any time, Madam Chair. And that's all I have for now.
Any questions prior to invited testimony?
It wasn't meant to be up like that.
That's all right. We do, just for committee members, notice more hand waving than mics up. It's a little different than on the floor for that. And I know different committees have got different traditions around that. All right, then we will go to our invited testimony. We have Vivian Stiver. She's a private citizen with a background providing services for seniors. Ms. Stiver, are you on the phone and ready to testify?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm online.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself and provide your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Vivian Stiver, and I'm testifying today as a private citizen. And full disclosure, I do sit on the Alaska Commission on Aging. And so as I go through the read my written word, please give me grace because I tend to get really halting and stuttery. I can talk all day long, but reading is a little difficult for me publicly. Honorable co-chairs, Mears and Hinsgut, and members of the committee, the Alaska Senior Raffle Bill is designed to create a dedicated revenue stream to support seniors who choose to remain in Alaska and age in their home communities surrounded by family, culture, and familiar connections. Alaska's older residents consistently identify access to food, transportation, and housing among their top concerns. The legislation addresses these priorities by establishing stable, ongoing funding to meet those needs. Alaska has experienced the fastest-growing per capita growth in senior population of any state, making current funding levels insufficient. This bill is intended as an additional revenue source, not a replacement for existing funds. To help meet the increasing demand for services and the rising costs, by 2050, Alaska seniors 60 and older is projected to comprise 24% of the state's population. By 2030, seniors 80 and older are estimated to grow from 20,228 to over 29,000. We are seeing numerous parts of our state with wait lists for Meals on Wheels program, in-home services such as housekeeping, and limited transportation funds. In Fairbanks, at any given time, the Fairbanks Senior Center's Meals on Wheels program has a 20 to 30 wait list for seniors in need of food. Please note that the wait list numbers can be misleading, as numerous seniors, when there is a wait list, are discouraged and do not sign up. In your bill packet is a copy of the 2024 Senior Snapshot, which is an excellent source of more detailed information, which is easy to read and covers many senior issues. The updated 2025 snapshot will be out next month. Currently in the state, we have two sources of income for senior-based services, flat federal funding and constrained state funding depending on the year. A third option is needed to not only serve current seniors, but to address increases in costs of labor, food, transportation, and the expansion of these services to meet the rapidly growing need going forward. All these services, when adequately available to our senior population, allow seniors to remain in their community, home community, surrounded by family culture and familiar connections. Aging is universal. These funds will ultimately benefit every Alaskan, either by meeting the needs of someone's grandmother or grandfather, mother or father, and eventually every one of us here today. As the saying goes, in a blink of an eye, let's prepare for the needs of our seniors now to ensure dignity in the aging process by being prepared to deliver these basic services. I want to thank you for the opportunity today to speak regarding HB 255. Communication is not a one-time event. I look forward to an ongoing dialogue, which will result in successfully addressing the need for funding of senior services. Thank you, and I open for any questions.
Thank you very much. You did great. So we do not have the senior snapshot at the moment in our packages, but we will get that from Representative Stapp's office and share that with committee members. Today is not a one and done on the hearing, so we'll have time to review that. Are there any questions for Ms. Stiver? Thank you very much. So we'll open it up to general questions. I'd like to note that we also have Tony Newman, the Director of Division of Senior and Disability Services from the Department of Health in the room to help with questions. I don't see any hands going up. Oh, Representative Holland.
There we go. Thank you. Good morning. And Chairman, thank you for bringing this before us, and Representative Stapp. I've got two things I was curious about. I don't myself participate in the education raffle, so I don't kind of know the details of it, although I found the material in this and reading through the bill helpful. But I'm curious about where a senior citizens grant raffle kind of sits into the fabric of supporting senior programs. I went to Pick, Click, Give and noted that we have, I think, 7 or 8 senior programs that are available for direct benefit, so that anything given through Pick, Click, Give is going to go 100% to those senior programs, including a Fairbanks program and others around the state. And I guess it just seems like if we're trying to give people the option to put permanent fund money that they would like to share with somebody else out there, that encouraging and expanding Pick, Click, Give, where that money is going 100% to those beneficiary programs. And I noted there are also, I think, a dozen or two food-related programs that I'm sure also benefit seniors, and I give a fair amount of my PFD to one of the food pantry programs. So kind of curious where the raffle fits into the ethos and the fabric, as opposed to just expanding Pick, Click, Give and putting more of that money directly into those hands.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Representative Holland. Hey, excellent question, right? So basically, the raffle concept is an incentive structure to get more participants in the program. So there are a lot of folks, like you mentioned yourself, Representative, who are just kind of wired to just want to do a direct contribution. Other people have different kind of motivations. The education raffle is very popular. And because there, you have the ability to win something, you know, so this is, there's kind of the prize agenda there. So really, it's just to create an incentive structure so more people actually contribute or think about contributing to these types of programs who would elsewise not, through the chair.
Okay, thanks.
Thank Paul. You. Follow up.
One of the aspects of the proposed legislation is the fund. And I believe, as proposed, the fund would need to get to $1 billion in terms of the corpus before it started spinning off some additional funds to go into additional grants. When I look at the education raffle system, its total corpus now is at about 2 point something million. It looks like it will take hundreds of years before this might get to the $1 billion threshold. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about the choice of the $1 billion capitalization, unless I'm mistaken about how this functions, and perhaps, you know, is this one going to get there a lot faster, so that I'm not, we could have many generations of folks that are seniors before that one kicks off money. I'm wondering what the thought process is there.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Holland. Fund capitalization, obviously, if you looked at long-term sustainability, it's a nice number to use as a benchmark. It's probably unrealistic to think that you'd be able to capitalize the fund at $1 billion. But, you know, we could pick a different number. We could make it pay endowment at $50 million or $100 million, right? Through the chair, you know, that's more of a mechanism question, and I don't have a problem of changing the number, but typically, you know, when you're in the bill drafting phase, you just kind of look at, on my little fiscal conservative brain being on the finance committee, I think, what's the most sustainable number I could get to that would make sure that you could offer these services independently in perpetuity? So in short, seemed like a very safe number to pick, through the chair.
Last follow-up.
Follow-up.
Okay. And thank you, through the chair. It is a nice round number. to finish up on the fiscal situation, I noted the fiscal notes are indeterminate because of the sizes of this, and yet there's looks like a modest amount of activity going on here to make this work. I'm wondering, is there a set of fiscal anticipated costs if we were to look at the education raffle and the amount of time, energy, and expense departments are putting in to manage the education raffle that would allow us to put some sort of estimate on the fiscal note for this program rather than just leaving it indeterminate when we have potentially a parallel program we could look right at and say this is a starting point to understand the impact?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Holm. Excellent question, and luckily for me, I have our wonderful folks from the Department of Health, and I don't know if we have anyone from Revenue here. That's a Revenue question. I think on a comparative notion, I could certainly go back and kind of look. That was an old Senator Bishop bill at PFD Education Raffle, so I could kind of look at what the initial startup costs were and try to make a comparison. But I can't answer you without consulting with Revenue to kind of see where their methodology is coming from. Through the chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that one of our fiscal notes was from DOR?
To the chair, I believe so. I think the first one is Department of Revenue, Taxation, and Treasury Appropriation. And the second one looks like it's perhaps the same. And the third one is Department of Health that I have in my packet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is it in their packet?
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Actually, I'm going to take a second bite at Rep. Holland's question. My excellent staff actually put the initial fiscal note from 28-2 from the education raffle in front of me because that was in my little binder here and I did not notice. So to answer Representative Collins' question directly, initially is a $4,400 operating startup cost.
Can I follow up? I appreciate that. I'm curious, though, whether or not we could get and I recognize it may not be here today, some actual data, since we don't really need to work off of the original estimated fiscal note. Now, it was education raffle was started. We might be able to get some information on what really went into it, and over the last couple of years of administering it, what has been the actual deployment, as opposed to guesstimating from the past.
For sure.
And I would presume that administering a raffle with the same structure might not be double the cost since that infrastructure is already in place, but it's a good number to have. So we'll make sure that before you come before the committee again, we've got that number out for folks. So did I see Representative Prox?
You did, yes.
Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Through the chair, I support the idea. People want to give. I don't want to get in their way. So the next thing is to structure everything to have the maximize the incentive to give and operate and all that. But could you go over just briefly again kind of how this works in – where am I at? Well, just how it works. Somebody can donate up $100 per ticket, and then it builds a fund, and get the details of how it works again, please.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Prox. So just clarification, would you like me to articulate? Obviously, I think the raffle portion is a little self-explanatory. Are you talking about the statutory splits I have in the bill on page 7 of the way the kind of waterfall donations work, through the chair?
I think so, yes. That some of it's going to go into the endowment funds. Some of it, I think, is going to be redistributed every year. Do I have that correctly?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Brock. So, yeah, ideally, in the flow chart we created in the statutory splits of page 7, you're going to find 25% is going to ideally go to the endowment fund, 25% is going to go to the raffle fund, and then remaining 50% is going to be distributed through the grant facilitation through the Department of Health to programs like Meals on Wheels and stuff like that, through the chair. I am not married to any of those, by the way. Again, those are just nice happy numbers, 25, 25, and 50. So folks at the committee want to put some time and thought and maybe changing some of those mechanisms, I'm totally open to that, just to let you know, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You have a follow-up?
Yes, and then this is discrete amounts on the dividend application that people fill out between now and the end of March, I think. And who knows what the legislature is going to actually appropriate this year. So if we don't appropriate enough to cover all of the contributions that somebody would make when they do their pick, click, give. Passing's next.
Yeah, through the chair to represent Prox. My staff mentioned that earlier. Happy to go over it again. So, Ms. Rexford, will you talk about what happens in the event somebody pick, clicks, gives more than they have PFD amount for, through the chair?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Prox. In Section 2, it outlines what happens in the event that someone donates over the over the declared amount of the dividend. There's a prioritization written in Section 2. So say if someone does donate in $100 increments over, say if they declared a $1,000 dividend, then they would prioritize it first to the Pick, Click, Give program, which includes the Peace Officers and Firefighters Survivors Fund, Victim Compensation Fund, second to the already existing Education Fund, and we would, and this fund would be set third on the prioritization in the event that someone does donate over the set amount. Does that answer your question?
So, I think it does, but just if I'm thinking correctly. The pick, click, give has priority one, and that's all. You go through all of the pick, click, give. Then the next one is the Peace Officers Fund. Or no, Officers Fund is in pick, click, give. Then the Education Raffle is next, and then if there's some left over, it goes into the Senior Citizens Fund. That's correct.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Prox. Thank you.
Okay.
Coach Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair Mears. Thank you, Representative Stapp. Excited about this bill. What are examples of senior support services? And the infographic talks about home-delivered meals, transportation services, and supportive housing. So are these all programs in Department of Health? It says so on the infographic. Is it then up to the Department of Health which programs get supported and where? So, for example, what is the geographic distribution?
Through the chair, Representative Hinshu, just a minor detail. It's the Department of Health distributes the funds to third parties through grants. And now how they pick and choose would be an excellent question for my folks at the Health Department. I'm not entirely sure. Hopefully you guys know if you'd like me to bring them up, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
I'm going to vacate the seat for a moment.
We'll miss you.
Good morning. My name is Tony Newman. I'm the director of the Division of Senior and Disability Services at the Alaska Department of Health. And to respond to Representative Hemshoot's question, yes, the Department of Health Division of Senior and Disability Services currently distributes about $18 million in grants, primarily for seniors, but also for other populations with disability. One of the largest grant programs we operate is called the Nutrition, Transportation, and Support Grant Program. That's around $7 million, and that is a combination of federal and state funds. The federal funding source is the Older Americans Act. We follow a funding formula to ensure statewide distribution of the of those funds that we work up with our colleagues at the Alaska Commission on Aging.
Follow up? Thanks. This is serendipitous. I have so many questions about how we fund programs for aging folks, and so I'm grateful for your time today. When you say that it's through a formula, I have communities with senior centers. I have communities without senior centers. So home-delivered meals is kind of hit and miss. If there's a senior center making meals for home delivery, awesome. But if there is not an entity making those meals, then that community does not benefit.
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, not necessarily. There are a variety of agencies that receive these funds, from a few thousand dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Some of the meals can be delivered in congregate settings, so people actually come and either sit with others and enjoy a meal, or they can pick up a meal to go. And then there's other services that that the local agency may be able to offer, homemaker services, outreach information referral services. So there are a variety of different programs that that agencies, small and large, can use with that funding.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thanks. So on the money flow chart, three things are specified, but there's actually a wider range of services for seniors or a variety of programs. And so just because these are what's named here doesn't mean this is the only place that senior benefits would go.
Through the chair, Representative Hemshute, we will be eager to make a determination as to how we supplement the existing programs with this funding, or whether we would need to establish new supports. Depending on the amount of money that comes in the door, we may need to establish a new program. So we have questions that we'll have to develop as the bill moves through its journey.
Okay. That's all I have. Thanks. I have another question for Will.
Okay, thank you. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm curious to know what qualifies as supportive housing services for seniors.
Through the chair, Representative Hall, that's an excellent question, and I think that we would like to discuss more with the sponsor about that effort, about that particular language in the bill. Does it mean assisted living support? Does it mean in-home support only in your own home? Is it meant to include rental assistance? These are some of the questions that we think we could stand to develop further.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute.
My question is for Representative Staff.
Okay. Any further questions for Department of Health? You're next in the queue.
I've been there. So you go for it.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the 50-25-25, good numbers, is that the priority of the 50% for the home-delivered meals and then 25 for transportation, 25 for the housing services? Is that based on numbers that you're seeing already? Like how did you come up with that priority of, you know, the 50% being the home-delivered meals being the highest priority, I would assume? Does that make sense when I'm asking?
It does, Representative Nelson, through the chair. I would defer to the sponsor to answer that question.
Okay.
Anything else for the department?
Right. Yeah.
Representative Holm.
Through the chair, Mr. Newman, thank you for being here. I'm curious, since you are here and we're looking at, you know, trying to help fill some needs within the senior organizations, what's your view of where the most dire needs are right now? And if we had some more money, whether it came in through this grant program or we just became aware of other funding we should be devoting, what's your view of what's happening right now in the funding? How could this funding, what would it be built? Where would you want to put it first if you had the opportunity to use it? And kind of as a segue, perhaps I'm curious if the rural health transformation money is in play with senior services. So kind of a specific question about this, but in a little broader place to go if you want.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Holland, I think that Ms. Stiver and Representative Stapp have done a really good job of placing the emphasis on this in this bill where it's needed. Nutrition, we hear that there are wait lists for services, for meal services. We hear that some senior centers are having to reduce the amount of meals that they can offer seniors. I hear a lot about transportation needs around the state and the fact that caravan-type services are getting harder and harder to operate. So I think they've chosen well.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Newman, or are we bringing Representative Staff back up? Representative Prox?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, just to clarify, the intent is to distribute the funds to these specific programs, or is that going to be developed in regulation?
Through the chair, Representative Prax, I don't think regulation would be needed to develop it, but the division would have to make a determination. Again, do we supplement existing programs? Do we create a new type of grant based out of this? Those are questions we'll have to resolve.
Okay. And
Representative Prax, one more?
Because it's on my mind. So that you would eventually, there would be, it'd be formula driven.
through the chair, Representative Prax, to ensure that there's a consistent and transparent process, we would want to establish some kind of formula like that. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. I believe there's additional questions for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to know everyone at the committee missed me while I was away. So, and I think I can take them in detail, unless you'd like to put them on the record again, Madam Chair.
Where are you going to start, Representative Nelson?
Representative Nelson.
Excellent. Please do.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Representative Nelson. So the percentages, numbers, again, those are kind of working with my experts on this topic in Fairbanks, kind of the percentages that we thought were best fit. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but kind of by no means are they like mechanically things that are required. Like if somebody on the committee's table wanted to do 27 and 23 and 47% instead, I mean, I would think those numbers would be a little weird, but I don't think that would change the mechanics of the bill. So, good chair.
Follow up, Representative Nelson?
Yes, ma'am. I guess just to clarify, thank you, Madam Chair. So, and as you've been researching this, it's just the home-delivered meals are the highest priority, the greatest need.
Yeah, and just for the record, Madam Chair, if Vivian is still on the line, she can certainly articulate the reasoning probably more in depth than I can, through the chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Would you like her to provide more information? Okay, thank you. Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair. Representative Stapp, following up on Representative Prax's question, I think the answer to some of the inquiry is on page 7 in section C. It appears that this proposed statute has specific formulaic allocation of the Department of Health distributing the grants. I believe it's 50% to the meals, 25% to transportation, and 25% to housing services. So I think might clarify whether or not there's some sort of formulaic structure already in place. I think if I understand the intent here, you are providing specific guidance to Department of Health on the allocation.
Thank you, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hall. Yes, I mentioned that section of the bill a few times now about the percentages. That's correct. That's the formulaic. And also, like I'll reiterate, not super married to how it's in there. I think it's the most efficient. And I think when I chatted with Ms. Diver, we kind of came to the conclusion that it would be the best way to meet the need. But again, certainly open to the will of committee.
Co-Chair Hemshoot.
Thanks. Representative Stapp, I was curious why you're aiming it at the Department of Health. I mean, we have a state senior benefits program, and would you consider having the funds flow there? Because those senior citizens qualify to receive whatever benefits the state can provide, and it's generally a really small amount. I could see just buttressing that being really helpful.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hemshoot. So the mechanics of senior benefits program are a little different. They have more kind of stringent, let's say, financial requirements on recipients and stuff like that than some of the other grant services. And I'm just kind of a big believer in if individuals want to help seniors, I'd rather really empower private sector organizations to do that than government do the nature of cost and efficiency. And this is just a really easy and kind of fun way for people to get involved in helping seniors through grant distribution through the chair.
And one last one.
You follow up?
Yeah, just a quick question. Why does it start at age 18? I assume the education raffles that way too. We don't trust the caregivers of the children to make these decisions.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Hemphrey. Excellent question. I do not know the answer. I will say, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a legal reason. I was able to join the infantry at 18, so you know, hopefully people could get their PFD. Ideally at 16, right? But I don't know. Through the chair. Okay.
Thank you. That does seem to follow, I'm guessing, some established policies for the PFD. Anyone else before I start getting going? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. I'm just trying to think ahead of if we determine the amounts of the three services here, and something happens in the market 5-10 years down the road that one or the other of these services is provided some other way. Let's go for transportation services. The Fairbanks North Star Borough runs a bus service, and they have a Vantran, and I think seniors can ride that when there's space available. I forget how that works, but I don't have an answer. Just something we should think about going in the future if that needs to be looked at.
Through the chair to Representative Prox. If I think I understand the question being, let me use kind of Meals on Wheels as a more practical example because I think it's easier to contemplate. You're basically saying, like, what happens if 8 years from now the Fairbanks North Star Borough basically runs the Meals on Wheels program itself with borough money or something like that, and this distribution would be different. I would hope that whoever is in this body 8 years from now would, and I'm sure the Department of Health, when they're distributing the grants, would kind of mention that, hey, like this type of program or service is outmoded or changed, and you just updated it at the time. Or rather, I'm fairly certain that the department would let us know that they couldn't distribute grants in the event that they had the funding is also. But you never know. Maybe they wouldn't. So, but I don't have a crystal ball. So.
Thank you. I've got a couple questions. So I don't recall what kind of income the education raffle brings in per year. Do you have a ballpark on that?
Through the chair to Representative Mears, I do not know. I could do the math based on the person who just won, though, if you gave me a little bit of time. But it is a good question. It seems relatively popular, right? But given the amount of money that they award, you take the basically permanent fund appropriation from last year, and then you'd kind of break it down by the awardee and the education split. But excellent question. I think I'd have to defer to revenue, which I don't have, through the chair.
Right. I'd imagine, and I don't have much of a basis for this, but in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a year? Yeah. Representative Holland, seems like you have an answer for us.
Chair Mears, it's just a little under $1 million in last year. It was 900 and some odd thousand dollars last year, and the total amount of the 25% that's been carved off over the years into the main fund is now about $2.3 million. So basically the total has been lately $1 million a year that is then split into the three buckets.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Representative Staff, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the endowment fund, and going off of Representative Holland's question earlier, it seems like establishing that fund has got a long, long time to meet a point where we've got that that spinoff. I very much appreciate that the state has benefited from endowment funds and that structure, but I guess I have some math to do, but it feels like that's going to be a place where we've got a fund where we've got money that we're not touching. So we're growing the wealth of the state that's not actually benefiting anybody until it gets large enough. Do you have any philosophical thoughts on that you want to share?
Through the chair, Representative Mears, I mean, we can kind of certainly take a look at the capitalization of the fund. I'll defer to the will of the committee again. If we want the fund, typically, endowment, you want to have a healthy kind of corpus before you have a kind of distribution methodology to make it sustaining. But given the fund that it's kind of viewed through the permanent fund raffle, like, we can certainly make changes to that if the committee has a strong feeling that they'd like to see funds distributed sooner. Usually in endowment, you have like target capitalization, but again, this is, again, meant to augment existing services, not replace them, so it's really not that critical when we talk about baseline capitalization compared to other types of things the state does. And I think that's pretty much my answer.
So, Representative Staff, what do you think about not having the endowment fund as part of this?
Through to the chair. Interesting question. I'm going to have to ponder the mechanics of that, and then I'd have to get back to you. But thanks for putting me on the spot. I feel like I'm getting stumped really good today. So,
thank you.
It's a really good question.
Strong committee here. Yeah. So my thoughts on that being that question of, you know, like, where does the money lie? So taking money and holding it in state coffers rather than having it either distributed to services or to folks directly. So I think some of that's a math problem of, like, you know, what would we be able to get to for a fund that we'd be able to get some benefit off of, which I get, and I think the state has benefited from those types of programs versus, you know, what it could potentially be otherwise. So we've got some things to continue to talk about. Any last questions from the committee? Thank you all for a wonderful discussion today. So I'll go back and make sure that I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's for what I need to do here. Thank you, Rep. Stapp. Thank you, Ms. Rexford. With that, we will set the bill aside until a later date. That concludes our business for today. On Thursday, we will be conducting a joint hearing with the House Tribal Affairs Committee to hear a presentation titled Alaska State Emergency Operations Center Update by Brian Fisher, the Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Please note that we will be meeting in the Davis Room 106. It is our intention for the committee to work with the House Tribal Affairs Committee to do a deeper dive into all of things disaster response and emergency management this session. So this presentation will be foundational starting point for things to follow. So that's what we're looking for our informational hearings. I'd also like to note Representative Ruffridge has gone over to Tribal Affairs, so we are chasing him down the hall. He can't escape us that quickly. So seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned. It is 8:50 a.m.